Hello, and welcome to another edition of Collect Miscellany Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to welcome back Olin Steinhauer, author of most recently The Cairo Affair, a standalone thriller, espionage thriller. Olin is, of course, one of my favorite authors and author of a number of books. One series was focused on the Cold War Eastern Europe, a sort of fictionalized look at Cold War Eastern Europe. And then a series of espionage books, starting with The Tourist, and now comes out with The Cairo Affair. So welcome, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me here, Kevin. Always a joy.
Well, let's talk about, I was interested, when you decide to do a book that focuses on, at least in some ways, current events, what sort of inspires that, and is there a fear that if you don't capture it just right, it'll have a negative impact? There's got to be a little trepidation.
Yeah, no, there really is. I suppose I'd finished American Spy, and I was wondering what I was going to write about next. And really, the news was just saturated with Libya, Egypt, and I started writing the book about that stuff, simply because a lot of the times I'm writing about things that are either in the distant past or entirely made up. I'll use current events to flavor a book. But in this case, I was just saying, this is a significant moment in history, and I'd like to, even if I'm not trying to explain that moment, to at least live in that world for a little while. And it was extremely intimidating at first, because I had to educate myself mostly from the ground up on Egypt, in Libya. I start the novel in sort of easy territory in Budapest. I didn't have to do any research for that. But once I got to Cairo in the book, yeah, I really was worried about getting details wrong. And I don't know, throughout all my books, I depend on a lot on, it's almost a magical thing of clear fictional thinking. It's the power of creativity to sort of get details right or get the feeling of a place right, even if you don't know it like a native. And in this case, I actually was getting comments back on Twitter and Facebook, people who, and actually in one of the readings I did, one of the book events I went to, who had graduated high school in Cairo. And she asked me, how long have you spent in Cairo to get it this right? And I was a little embarrassed to say I didn't go to Cairo at all. And I've gotten other comments from people about how well I got Cairo itself. Whether or not they like the book, they seem to like the Cairo that I came up with. And I'm really pleased about that. And the same thing happened with An American Spy, where I spent long periods in China in the book. And I got people, really, really people from Hong Kong, telling me how well I did on the details. And that's always just a pleasant surprise for me.
It's almost something, it is something magical about literature, that in fiction, in an indirect way, you sort of capture something about a place. In making up stories about it, you could somehow capture it better.
Exactly.
Than a straightforward historical narrative.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, the sort of the novelistic imagination and the act. It's not just the imagination, it's also the act of putting words together to create a narrative. It gives you these insights into places and also to people. I've said before that my writing is smarter than I am, and I believe that's true. I think of writing as a way of thinking, and it doesn't work for everybody in the same way. But for me, I think I'm a better thinker when I'm writing fiction. It's interesting. I've always been fascinated by this.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something else that struck me on the writing perspective. it seemed like this had more of an ensemble cast, more of a equally dispersed group of people who were telling the story. For some people, that presented a problem. I thought it was really interesting the way you used the different perspectives to get at issues that you almost always wrestle with in your stories about, you know, what is really true and yeah. How do we understand truth and what's black and white and how much is gray. Was it something you consciously set out to do, is to deal with an ensemble cast and not have one main sort of protagonist that really drives the story?
Yeah, it was conscious. And you may notice in the Milo books, they become more like that as the books go on. And part of it is, I mean, I'm writing espionage, and to my mind, you almost never have a single person who understands a situation. To see a situation completely, you have to take in multiple perspectives. Not just to know what happened, but why everything happened, which is always more interesting to me in any sort of storyline. And I think that, you know, it's not just espionage, though this technique, I think, works really well there. It's sort of in our own lives. We're confronted with sort of two-dimensional versions of people we know. And that third dimension is only inside their heads. So any sort of situation we run across, any conflicts or what have you, we only understand, you know, perhaps 30, maybe 60% of what's going on in any individual situation. And this is a way of sort of showing this dramatically. No one in the story has the complete truth, which to me just rings true.
Seems like, too, it's the novel is sort of about decisions that are made and have to be made on very limited knowledge. Each character is trying to figure things out, but they don't have the luxury of sort of waiting till all this information comes in. They kind of have to move forward.
Exactly.
Based upon all, and as the information comes in, you know, what happens once you realize, oh, you know, two decisions ago I was wrong, but it's too late now. I've already set in motion a series of events that I can't undo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, yeah.
How do you keep track of all those threads, though? Is that a challenge, too, from the author's perspective of making sure they do line up in a logical way at the end?
Yeah, it is. I think, as you know, I don't outline ahead of time. And as a result, I'm sort of discovering things along the way. I'm not one of the writers who says, oh, my character took over or anything like that. I'm always in control of the story. But I don't know from the beginning what sort of twists and turns will get the characters out the other end. And that method leads to continuous complications, I think. I'm doing the same thing where I make a decision and two chapters later I realize it was wrong and I have to go back and change. And so the stories that I end up with through this method, I think, are probably five times more complicated than it would be if I sat down in one fell swoop and outlined the whole thing. I wouldn't be able to keep track of all those twists and turns in an outline. I would be confused. I can't do spreadsheets. I don't have that kind of mind. But in the process of writing, I think about each decision and I complicate things more and more along the way. The amazing thing for someone like me who has such a shoddy memory is that I actually am able to keep track of all these twists and turns, so that later in the book, I know people cannot do certain things because of a decision that was made 60 pages earlier. I don't know why I'm able to remember this stuff. I think it's just because I've just handed half of my brain to the act of writing. It obsesses me throughout the day. So I'm able to keep track of these things, but I'm never able to predict them before they end up on the page. This is the whole idea of writing is thinking. And the act of thinking simply complicates things all along.
Well, it strikes me, too, that, and maybe this is my bias coming in, but it strikes me as some people are frustrated with that, the style that works out of that, because if you're looking for a sort of, you know, traditional thriller, yeah, there's lots of loops and turns and twists, but it's pretty much a straight line. You know, you have a hero and you have an evil guy and there's this plot and they kind of work it all out. It seems to me you don't want anything to be quite so clear.
Yeah.
You're comfortable with ambiguity and with a deterministic sort of outlook.
Yeah, very much so. I remember when I was in grad school, I had a conversation. You know, it's funny, you remembered small details from your life, but not the big things. I remember having a conversation with a young poet who was also in the same program. And she told me sort of very earnestly that her aim with her poetry was to show people how simple the world was. And I was surprised by that because I realized back then my aim was completely the opposite. It was to show people that what they think is simple is not simple. And this method, this sort of narrative that I put together is very much an outgrowth of that sort of mission that I've set for myself. I'm not a propagandist for this. It's just how I see the world.
Well, let's talk about a little of the gray. First, starting with the part that that I thought was a really interesting mix. You almost wouldn't think it would work. It's the Budapest, the Eastern European part of it that ends up lurking in the background and then comes out. I thought that was an interesting choice. Was it there from the start? I mean, here you have Egypt and the Arab Spring and all this current events. You wouldn't connect that back to that part of the world. How did you begin to pull that out in your mind and see how these two threads would come together?
Well, part of it was I needed to give Sophie a complicated background. And this, I mean, I spent a long time on this book, and it went through so many different shapes. Originally, Sophie was nothing like she is now. Sophie was not the reason for the book, whereas in the end, the book looks like Sophie is the reason for the book to exist. She ended up becoming more interesting as time passed, and I needed to take sort of a middle class or upper middle class mainstream American and take them outside of their comfort zone, but early enough in their lives that it would change them. It would change something at their core. And so I know about Yugoslavia. My wife is Serbian, and so I know a fair amount of this history. I know Novi Sad. I know the area I was talking about. And I suppose I was reaching for what I knew, for that background, because I knew I could handle that. And to me, there's this connection of sort of wars and revolutions. They all have various common threads, and putting Cairo and Serbia and ex-Yugoslavia together acts more as an echo, I think. It's not suggesting that one is identical to the other. It's just that similar themes come up. Though in the Yugoslav or Serbian sense, it was a much more nationalistic thing going on.
Well, how do you think that sort of motives and a character background, do you have to kind of build that up in your mind? It seems like you have a really wide group of people in this ensemble cast, people, Americans, you know, Egyptians, people with a Serbian background. Do you have to sort of understand those characters, sort of live in those characters' shoes for a little bit before you can write their story out? How do you try to see the world from their eyes?
Now, the writing, I mean, for me, because I know writers who do this, who will sit down and write a biography or something like that before they even put pen to paper for the actual story. And I work the opposite way. As I'm writing the story, I learn and sort of figure out what kind of character is required in this area. And then once I have that, I start to expand into their past and to get to know them. I'm not one for building histories or constructing things beforehand. And I don't do a lot of like making up history that is not being shown in the story. Any writing I do about a character's history is part of the novel. And it's back to the, you know, writing as a way of thinking, is that only by writing their story will I understand the character better and adjust things along the way.
One of the things that always stuck with, speaking of memories from college, one of the things that struck me is I had a philosophy professor at the University of Oregon who said, the most dangerous lies are the lies we tell ourselves.
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting in reading the story of the different characters, both at a personal level and at sort of a national level. Mm-hmm. We sort of believe what we want to believe.
Exactly.
And we're uncomfortable when evidence comes to the fore. Relationships begin to reveal things that we don't want to know about them.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like there's something in the book that's sort of saying that at a national level, we often tell ourselves what we want to hear.
Yeah.
Sort of reconstruct history after the fact. Is that something that interests you?
Yes. It is. I mean, the perception of truth is important. I think one of the characters in it has this line about espionage, that it's a pseudoscience, like astrology. Sometimes the methods prove that what you're doing is correct, that your methodology is correct, whereas other times it proves it's completely wrong. So in that case, what do you take away from that? Does that mean that espionage methodologies work or that they don't work? There is no correct answer for that. I'm trying to think of some of the other characters and the way they lie to themselves. Sometimes they lie they're filling in the blanks of what they don't know, but they're filling it with what they want to think is true. And in that case, it might as well be true.
Well, I also found it interesting. It seemed like at the end, and I don't want to give away the ending or anything,
sure,
but it seemed like what you might call the good guy or the person who finally puts it all together. One of the reasons he does so is because he's more grounded in his own, in the reality, if you will. He's more grounded in his actual life.
Yes.
He doesn't seem to lie to himself as much or tell himself what he wants to hear. I found that interesting that he by just living in the moment almost, he was able to start to put things together. Whereas everybody else who's frantically chasing things ends up just sort of chasing their tails because they're just almost getting ahead of themselves by chasing.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, he's above it in a way. Yeah, it's giving away too much to say his name, but I really like that character. It's the sort of the clarity of thought that's necessary for putting everything together. And even that character doesn't know everything, if I remember right. It's been a while since I read it. I left him with things that he does not know. But if I remember right, he also knows that there are things he does not know, and that's okay.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You almost have to be, maybe reflecting your perspective, you have to be comfortable with some ambiguity.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you'll never be able to move forward.
Yeah. And I think that's true. I mean, this is, and yeah, on the political stage, this is completely true. Militarily, the military cannot know everything before it walks into a country. That's just the reality of the situation. Yet it still has to act sometimes. The same with politicians making decisions on policy. They cannot completely know the outcome on it. And, of course, politicians, they rarely know the outcome on it. But decisions have to be made. Things have to move forward. And it's troubling, but necessary.